Q. Makalua.
Lakutus.
Imran Siddiqui.
K. Madeline.
Cardamandua.
QNL.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
Welcome to Polycast,
a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Hey, Dan.
Hi, Wouter. How are you?
So, is Makalua here?
What, Makalua?
Makalua. Okay.
Takes some getting used to with the echoes.
Yes, that's true. And not being able to see each other, so it's hard to say when someone's about to speak.
Well, that's what will make this all the more interesting.
That's true.
And hopefully we won't what? Too much.
No, I did that on purpose. And just so you know, yes, I've been recording this for about the past minute already, so...
Uh-oh. So this will be heard by future generations?
Are you here, Mythos? I guess not. Is your mic plugged in?
Oh, no.
Oh.
Did your wife mute it so you wouldn't sound like a... She's wrong, you know. You don't sound like one.
And Imran was actually here, although maybe he got another phone call.
Uh-huh, I'm popular, you.
So when's the court date been reset?
That was only one time, man. I've not been called in for since then.
Hey, that was too much information, so let's all run now.
Dan, you sound faint.
Faint?
Yeah.
I do mouth-to-mouth, if that'll help.
The citizens of a particular city don't like the name you gave to the city. They think it's lame. They have joined X.
That's why we call you City Pig Iron.
That'd be funny.
You guys are really guys, right? Your voices sound like it.
She'll be coming round the mountain.
No singing.
That's what she said.
That's what she said.
Dan's on the dirty train.
What? Is that like the crazy train?
No singing.
Look, it was so bad you had a guest telling you not to sing.
Dan, you're the only one who hasn't said anything in the, so you do form talk.
I have to edit the entire show. What?
Hi, my name is Emma, and I'm a Civ addict.
Hi, Emma.
I've been addicted since the ancient era. I used to have a job, but I vassalized my coworkers and led a revolution against my boss. One turn later, I was sacked.
The map was of a fictional civilization as part of a simulated world.
Sweet.
Yeah, what you do is you take these countries that are already in a database and you assume control of them. Two societies separated by a river straight down the middle. Shepard took one country, I took the other. But this is no ordinary game. I mean, it is incredibly challenging, instructional, and the sheer number of options built into it, staggering.
How does one play it?
You got to figure out the best way to run your country.
Yeah, you build roads, you establish laws, mold it to your own specific ideology.
Yeah, we play against the AI, and he always wants to set it at a lower level than we need to. And I'm like, honey, we can set it higher. And we end up setting it at whatever level he wants to. Or sometimes we'll set me higher than him. But then we still end up totally whopping over them. And every time we'll say, okay, you're right, next time we'll go harder. And then he doesn't remember that, and he won't let me. And then we end up totally slaughtering them. So one of these days, he'll remember and let me make it harder. Because with two of you, it's just easier.
Yeah.
So how do you win this game?
It's not really about winning.
It's more about whose society outshines the others. I mean, who creates a better infrastructure? Who's better at trade?
just the other day, I was playing a single player game and got a random event popped up about a marriage
and it was
being held in the religious tradition of my nation and not theirs, and they were kind of pissed off. So, you know, you've got the three choices, which is like a nominal gift and then like a medium and then go out lavish. So I was like, yeah, let's go for lavish, and they declared war on me.
See, yeah, that shouldn't have been a nominal gift, fine. Maybe because they considered it an insult, if you will. But given the, it's a little disconnect there.
Like, I understood that our relations weren't that strong to begin with, and I realized that going lavish could probably piss them off, but I'm thinking if the tables were turned, I wouldn't go to war with you over that. Whoa!
Well, they were just looking for an excuse. Chalk it up to that. That was the excuse good enough.
Were they really upset about the event, or were they upset that I served chocolate cake instead of vanilla? Like, I have no idea.
What?
Hey, don't start. I tried to negotiate with you.
Making a list of demands and not getting anything in return is not negotiating.
I offered you an entire crop of beans.
I don't need beans. I need lumber.
Oh, right. To build defensive fortifications for your army, which he doubled in size, by the way. Surprise, surprise.
I only did that after you started cheating.
I did not cheat.
We run voice at the same time, and one person might be great at military, and the other might be a better builder, and then we help improve each other's game.
But I have this problem. If I'm on voice, I never shut up. I don't know if you've noticed.
Right, then do it with the girls. Do it with the girls, and we all overlap.
I just laugh a lot, so you might get sick of that.
No, but there's a couple of girls who really enjoy it to the point of cackling.
Cackling.
A lot of multiplayer player girls. And even some of the guys will giggle and howl. I can't believe he did that.
I've done everything I could to achieve peace with you.
Really? Such as?
I sent gifts of goodwill.
You sent crates of citrus fruit. Citrus! Do you have any idea what an insult that is to my people?
Didn't used to.
The only insult has been your unwillingness to compromise in any trade negotiation. Instead, you choose to increase the size of your army.
You built an army, too.
Only in response to your aggression.
My aggression? You dig a mine beneath our borders to steal our coal, and you have the nerve to talk about aggression.
We're not stealing
your coal. You crossed into our land.
What do you need it for anyway? It's not like you know the first thing about what to do with it.
You got to wonder what some of those units are thinking, though. Is I've been sitting here for 1,000 years. The borders have already expanded past my outpost. Why can't I go home?
Now, here's a thought on that, actually. They could add something in that was like a sort of a military civics tree, where you've got local levies. So you immediately get a bunch of cheap units, but then if you need to delete them, you've got too many, you just hit disband, and they go back to their homes. And then you can hit recall and summon them again. But if you had, say, standing retinue, you could send them home, but you'd have to pay their wages first, but they're a better quality type of unit or something.
You're making me think of Warcraft 3 in the sense that if you have people working, you can do, like, call-to-arms thing, right? You could send them back after.
Yeah. Warcraft 3, you call-to-arms, and all of your peasants become militia. Yeah, that's a sort of idea.
Well, it's not just Warcraft, but I think Rise of Nations had that.
I think so.
You could have it operate, it's a bit like a draft, but when you send them back, you get the population points back.
Right.
So you use up population points to raise the levy, go off to war, and then the survivors go back and add population points back based on how many survived.
Yeah, and so you've got your levy as your cannon fodder troops, and then you've got your retinue who are better equipped, but you have to pay their wages.
Then you've got your regular trained troops who are permanent, your standing army.
So you've got your standing army that you always have, and then you've got gold recruit and population recruit. And anyway, just an idea that randomly came to me.
Maybe resource-based recruits.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
His people are digging a mine across the border into Helona. The coal resources straddle the border between my country and his.
Oh, barely. They go 3 miles into my country, which your people are happily tunneling into.
It has been a point of contention between us, okay? But it is just a difference in cartographic interpretation. Tomato. Tomato.
No. It's pretty clear cut.
You entered illegally into my country.
Gentlemen.
You gave me no choice. You refused to negotiate.
Oh, you didn't give in.
What do you care anyway? It's not like your people are going to use the coal.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You needed to power your medieval steam engine.
Kind of like the declaration on AI in Civ 4.
Oh, that was the other thing we noticed in multiplayer. In the diplomacy screen, there is a declare war button by the human players, and it would be really easy if you were trying to contact them for diplomacy to accidentally hit declare war.
Yeah, so click on the Civ icon or their name. Do not click farther to the right than the declare war. I don't actually know, like, how far over that goes, so hug to the left if you don't want to declare war. Hug to the right if you want to.
People who like shiny things the most.
But that's just the straight gold comparison, which is kind of backwards, like, not wonders or other things. So Dan will be, like, just sitting on gold the whole game. He won't use it for anything. He won't, like, buy off city states. He won't enter research agreements. He'll just hoard all his gold.
Just so I can be number one on that list every single time it pops up, however often it does in the game.
He's like, I'm trying to corner the global energy market. What?
This is an Alpha Centauri.
That's essentially what you do, though, when you buy up all the city states. I won, there was like 15 total votes left on the map, and I won with 14 votes.
What are you talking about? It's a perfectly reasonable request. Oh yeah, perfectly reasonable. Yeah. I give you all of my food and my people's stock.
I am not asking for all your food requests.
I did say that we would make a deal.
A deal?
Oh yeah, baskets.
Big baskets. 2 dozen of them, hand-woven and very nice.
Oh, very nice. What am I going to put in?
Huh? Certainly not food.
I think you're holding out on me.
I think you have plenty of food.
Are you calling me a liar?
No, I think you're trying to squeeze me for a better deal. That's what I think.
I have got nothing to hide. Now, you
okay, okay, so maybe I'll get some of my army troops down and we'll have a look.
I had a giant stack of chariots that I had conquered almost my entire continent with, and I was coming down to the very last few cities of the last civ, and he just got rifling. Yes, I was using chariots at that point of the game. And I had maybe about 70 chariots at this point, and he had a few rifles in the city, and I threw all 70 chariots at the city, and the very last chariot won the city.
Really?
Yeah, I thought that I would win it much easier than that.
You normally would. Were they, like, protective or something?
I can't remember what his defensive bonuses were, but it was the most crappiest crap. And that was one of the things about this game, is that, yeah, it's random, it's got odds, but it seems that those odds don't really say what they say. Can you imagine one guy with a rifle standing behind a wall as an army of, say, you know, 700,000 people on chariots charges at him? Well, I guess I'll start with the guy in the front. Not even a guy with a machine gun could hold off that army.
Yeah, that's true.
So much power at one's fingertips.
It's amazing the attraction of this game.
I only wince a little bit when I see bad grammar, but I don't really care. If it's spectacularly terrible, then maybe. It turned into a running joke in one of the threads about, like, if you're alive or something on the forums right now. But for the most part, these are intended to be informal settings. So getting worked up over it, I don't know.
For the most part, it seems to be really good. The case I can think of that I regularly notice bad grammar is in the form of plurals, like, your immortal has killed Archer.
Oh, yeah, in the game, that's true.
I mean, how hard would it be to make it an and for the valve?
I would still rather them fix certain other things. Let control and shift and alt click work properly every time first. Now, I would be willing to accept the A Archer.
Call the truce yet?
Yeah, sure. We're good.
Yeah, don't worry. We're going to stick to chess from now on.
Trying Randy doesn't cheat.
Oh, please. Like, I need to cheat playing you.
12 events occurring, 11 citizens a-hammering, 10 chariots a-rushing, 9 spies a-snooping, 8 tanks a-blitzing, 7 wonders a-sparkling, 6 colonies a-liberating, 5 stacks of doom, 4 gold per turn, 3 barbs uprising, 2 vassals capitulating, and a popped hot free technology.
Okay.
Yay.
That's pretty goofy.
So when I first got Civilization 4, I didn't play it that much, but you know, as the years went on, 5,000 years. 5,000 years. Yeah. Sometimes I like to go to 7,000, you know, mixed up.
Adam used to be really addicted.
I did, yeah.
He used to pretend you were... What was that guy? That was that guy.
Bismarck.
Yeah, he used to pretend he was Bismarck.
I don't do that anymore. It's, you know, you've got 30 people saying, what are you doing? Just stop it. And I did. I'm clean.
It was really funny. You should have seen his mustache. It was ridiculous.
Do you remember that time that you went dressed as... You know, Julius Caesar to that date.
No.
Very inappropriate.
I don't even know who.
It was the Ritz. You can't dress in a toga to the Ritz.
It was the toga party, so it's allowed.
Nobody else had it.
Everybody else forgot their toga. I was the only one dressed appropriately.
You make us all sound very Canadian, basically.
Yeah, I make all of us sound like ladies and gentlemen. We're really just a bunch of thugs. Okay, that's secret number one.
And thugettes. I'm voting for myself. Oh, wait.
But you're not funny.
You know what, Imran? It's funny when I know what the response is before she's even said it. Yeah, but that requires you finding a girl and stuff like that first.
No, no. I've already found my girl. My whatever your name is.
No, not you specifically.
Like, you're it.
Oh,
you're
wait.
It. You're it.
Wait a minute. Weren't you the one that said that you and Mackie were separated at birth or something?
Oh, no.
Run away. I didn't say we were born to the same parents. I said we were meant to be together.
Oh, I know. Mackie said that she'd love Sid or something like that, and I said, oh, sure. Mackie will say that she loves Sid, but nobody else. And so then I said, that's okay. I'll just take when Mackie said, I love you, and then another time she took my name and just merge it together. So then the joke is, I love you. Damn you.
Love you. I love you.
Oh, right. I could do that with Lisa now, too.
There we go. We can add some of these sound effects to it, too. Man, that'd be really convincing.
Oh, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. What if you're talking to your girlfriend or something? Hey, baby.
All right, another soundbite. Sweet.
Oh, shut up.
We can use that, too.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh dear. I don't know if you want me to use that.
Don't stop.
Get
with don't stop. That was not intentional. That's the funny part.
We're talking about Siv here, Lisa. Siv.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what this polycast was about.
More or less, on occasion.
Polycast period, yeah.
Screw Civ references. We're not going to get those.
I really don't edit Dan. He's going to have to edit this. I mean, our banter is bad enough, but the technical difficulties...
Well, as long as he doesn't decide that the best way to edit this episode would be Format C. Just give up and say the last episode was the one of the seasons.
It was so horrible we decided to cancel it.
As long as you don't have the O there, it's fine.
Oh no, we're definitely keeping that.
No!
I prefer the
That'll bring in additional listeners.
And you nearly looped. Really amusing.
That would have been spectacular.
Dealing with means something else over here.
Yeah, that probably won't make it to the show.
It was an edit point there.
You said the magic word, shiny.
Now Dan's day is complete.
You can't be too upset about this, Dan.
I don't like the list in parts, but I don't really hate it either. It's fine.
How would you do a list?
Don't encourage Dan to make lists.
I'm not going to do a top 100 list. I'm not that.
No, no. He did the top one game to play today. Civ 4.
Yes, the entirety of Dan's list.
There you go.
Get a boot it.
Are you going
speaking
to
of boot.
University in the sixth form? What is that all about?
So about this Empire's and Allies thing.
Yeah. Oh, this is just a harassing show? Oh.
That's every show.
I don't know if you still have room for me, but maybe.
There's always room for you.
And Jell-O.
Been on, this is why I keep track of this. This is going to have to be edited. I should have had this right in front of me for a nice, smooth transition in the sentence rather than this explanation about why it's not a smooth.
We could have had a smooth transition, but that's just not our style.
We don't operate that way.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes about how you go about the editing of it all. You said that 6 to 10 hours it takes to edit 2 hours worth of taping?
On average, yeah.
It's because he has to deal with a bunch of different feeds simultaneously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, a lot of that's been optimized, so if a guy like me right off the bat, that'd probably take twice as long, if not more, to do that same.
At least probably 50% longer anyway, yeah. When it comes to editing, I'm pretty particular. Very strict. The ums and the ahs and the you know and like, I cut most of those out.
I'm really glad you do, because that makes a humongous difference in the ability to listen to things like that.
Yeah.
Well, no, I was just saying, he really wanted to declare on Dan, he just didn't want to say he was, so...
You know. No, I didn't know Dan enough yet, well enough to know that I actually did want to declare on him yet. I mean, that turned out to be a fortunate thing, but, you know, it was my first game, so I didn't know any better. I actually regretted it, believe it or not.
Yeah, but now that Phil knows me, declaring war on me is just a given.
Dan does an excellent job of editing.
That's great.
He'll clean you up, and you're going to be really impressed with the difference between what you heard today and what you're going to hear when you listen to the show.
I try to go easy on him, but he still cleans me up pretty nicely, too.
He's not going to screw up our sieve, therefore, fuck off.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Whoa, Mackie, isn't that like the second time you said the F word today?
Yeah, I think she's getting furry. She's getting. Yeah.
Always got to watch for dropping the F bombs last night.
I just forgot to hit the mute button on my mic this time. Oh, okay. Well, then. Thank you, Crickets, for that lovely rendition of your awkward silence song.
No.
Yeah, the final show, editing that out in particular, is very good.
Yeah, there you go. The last episode of podcast will be 44 minutes and 59 seconds of awkward silence. You heard it here first.
I'm excited.
Yeah, this is from previous episodes, I swear.
Yeah, this is your first time on this year, so you have the comparison of what it used to be like when we used to pre-record the show.
It's interesting. There is a greater potentiality for mishaps, but I think it's fun. I
have enjoyed it.
Like mine.
No, he's doing that. It's from a game.
No, I'm thinking of some of the things that Dan's had to edit out in the past with certain individuals.
I think some of us here are still guilty of saying things that would be edited out, at least while that previous format was still going on.
Yes.
Oh, sure.
Well, I had a lot of fun. I hope I did all right for you guys. Yeah?
Absolutely, but you didn't have too much fun, right? We can't have that.
Well, it depends which hand you... Oh, wait.
So I guess the question was, did you want to play with us?
I absolutely would.
Wait a minute.
That'll have some interesting recorded audio during that section there.
Yeah. All right, how fun are you back there?
Tell me why you're here.
You know what? Honestly, I have no idea why.
It's because of your addiction.
That's ridiculous. It's not like Civ's all I do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have friends. I do other things.
Like what?
I rap. Spend your man on a gold, man. I got gold for days, gems to trade, police state. I got a second due to rearrange your face. This game's been played. I'm up in space. You're still cranking warriors from the ancient age.
That sounded like it was entirely about Civ.
See, what you're doing is you're projecting, and really, none of this is about me.
Denial is common among addicts.
I am not in denial, all right?
Then show me your room.
Why?
Your mom said I need to see your room.
Whatever.
Red Star's this mod that comes with Beyond the Sword, and prior to the previous game patch, the scenario goes like this. Russia has fallen apart, it's broken up into different military states, there's a bunch of military leaders, and there's a whole heap of cities that are barbarian cities now. They have no government. And spread across the country are nuclear silos that have nuclear weapons, and they're protected by coalition forces, and they're vastly superior to your own forces. The basic idea is to control four nuclear silos unlaunched to win the game. And to do that, you have to capture the silo, crack their code, and keep control of it because more coalition forces will come in to try and take it back. However, the scenario got a lot more interesting after the latest Beyond the Sword patch, because instead of each city acting as its own independent barbarian city, all of those barbarian cities united as a single AI. So essentially, the game was turned on its head. You were not a military leader trying to reunite the country. No, instead, you are a terrorist organization trying to capture the entire country by capturing these nuclear weapons. Then the game becomes incredibly hard. It's all modern-based. You start off with one city, and you've got to basically try and take the entire country. And the further you go, the more and more barbarian units start appearing on the map. And they're all really advanced modern tanks and modern bombers and modern fighters and all that kind of stuff. And it becomes really interesting. So someone finally cracked it. How do you win this broken scenario? Well, what you need to do is ally with all the other military leaders who have their own individual cities, and then build and buy lots of bombers and place them in those friendly cities, and then bomb all the improvements around the enemy barbarian cities. And there's a bug in the AI. When the AI gets bombed, it hides all its units inside the city to defend the city from an imminent attack, which never comes. So that gives you the time to actually take the nuclear silos and win the game. If you don't bomb their improvements, all the units come out and attack you.
Wow. So do you have a link for this scenario?
Yeah, sure, I'll find it.
Because I've heard of Broken Star, but not Red Star.
Oh, well, that's what I'm talking about.
Ah!
He was just waiting to see if you noticed, Dan.
The important bit is the Broken Star is broken.
It's very, very broken.
And that's how you beat it.
You probably saw that huge discussion about protective threat that happened in TFC. It comes about every 2 months. Someone's talking protect that protective this week, and the people say, it's not weak, you are a noob, you don't know how to play it, and 10 pages after, we are somewhere in the same stance, and everyone forgets the thread, and 2 months later, we start all over again.
Comes up again.
Well, the fact is that I use that example. I've seen some very nasty perspectives to boost the trade that would completely unbalance the game. something like giving 100 extra espionage points just because of that. You can imagine what that would do in the moment that you had alphabet. Or making walls cheaper or something like that, or cut the hammer overflow trick that some people agree, some people don't agree. Well, the fact is that the players will never agree about what is balanced and what is not balanced. Some players will think that things is balanced. So some others will think that it's completely overpowered. Some people that will think that it's underpowered. In fact, I remember the Roman Praetorians that said something like, Praetorians are weak because they can be killed by shock axes. They should fix that. It's true, I'm not kidding.
If you couldn't kill a Praetorian with a shock axe, that'd be Romans would be
And I remember a guy that responded that they should come with nukes, be invisible.
Go after great people.
Like Seattle great people, or just hide it to them great people? There hasn't been used yet.
That haven't been used yet, perhaps.
I thought that'd be interesting if you could go for Standard Great, but also maybe it's too painful.
I actually posted a thread not too long ago where I just had the idea of, like, when you went ahead and you captured a city, and they had, like, a bunch of subtle great people, you should be able to, like, reanimate them and maybe move them to a different city. Only to settle them, not to be used for anything else.
You can do that in Sivrev.
You can.
You can settle a great person, and then you can decide later on in the game you want to move him somewhere else. He can also rush completion of something, and obviously the unit is consumed, but settling a great person in Sivrev does not mean that they are necessarily settled in that city for the duration of the game. And you can also capture great people.
I thought you didn't know that much about Sivrev.
You learn something every day, Annalie.
See, that would be great for Beyond the Surf. I'm just sick and tired. Like, you capture, like, an AI city, and it has two settled great scientists, a great prophet, and four great generals all settled into it. You know, I want to break them up. I want to specialize my cities. That would work out actually very cool.
Maybe there should be a cost to that. So, like, if you want to move so-and-so a great person, it should cost you a certain amount of gold.
Someone had the suggestion in there that there should be a failure percentage, that if you went to move them at some point during the move, the great person would vanish, lose the great person, sort of like a spy getting caught in enemy territory. I think that was actually a pretty decent idea.
But it might be too risky, though. People might not decide to use it and just leave.
No, it depends. What's an option? If you wanted to use it, you could use it. If you didn't, you wouldn't. But at least you'd have the option.
You know, just like you can use a great general to and turn them into a warlord.
Sometimes it saves people's butts in multiplayer.
It has its rare, exceptional, annoying uses.
Dan's still sore. Dan's still sore.
Not so useful units, buildings, GPs, and wonders.
That was funny.
Balsaraf.
The one I liked the most was not so unique unit for America, Indiana Jones, +1,000% versus Nazis, +1,000% versus tanks. When he gets captured, he escapes two turns later.
It's true.
I like the one from Kark about the Tower of Babel, the not-so-useful wonder. 700 hammers, masonry, polytheism. Gives owner knowledge of every tech discovered by any civ. Every square of the world immediately turns into ocean. All civs are destroyed.
Oh. It took me a minute, but you all lose.
Yes, give me all your techs now or I complete this wonder.
There were some things that weren't wonders or units in there. There were a couple of civics one, like neoconservatism, -2 in relations to every other civilization, +1 happiness for every priest in a city, but -1 for every other kind of specialist. But then someone said, fixed, except scientists. Those get -3. A nerd, a not-so-useful specialist, +2 beakers towards future technology each turn, -1 food, +10% city maintenance, -5 culture per turn, -2 experience for units built in this city, and +3 great person points more likely to generate a great nerd. That's really well done. Being Canadian, I like the Avro Arrow, a Canadian unique unit. As soon as it gets built, it has to be dismantled again.
Zing.
I'm actually thinking that probably future variations of Civ will have different rules for multiplayer and single player. They're basically just two different games. The compromise is really bad.
Well, I think Civ 4 was written as a multiplayer game, and then the AIs were slotted in, and that makes the single player game. It's technically following the multiplayer rules, it's just the AIs don't quite think rationally.
Yeah, that's true, but well, they're not supposed to think rationally always. Mm. AIs are supposed to do a bit of role-playing.
Yeah.
So people enjoy an AI that basically does something that makes sense rather than something that makes sense in-game.
Yeah.
It's interesting the variants and tactics that are practical in multiplayer versus single-player. Because of the AI bonuses, making some things that would work in multiplayer absolutely impossible in single-player, and vice versa. Big stack moving into a human territory is just going to get wrecked by siege after the very early game. Whereas against the AI, it's absolutely dominating.
That's not a change in the rules. That's just the AI not being able to cope.
Well, yeah, but that's my point. You would have to literally make different games entirely if you're going to go down that path.
If you improve the quality of the AI without changing the rules of the game, then the AI can play the game better.
Dude, they're trying, and they're trying hard. There's a project, the Better AI project, and they are improving it, but there's only so much you can do. they've been at it for years now, and even so, they're just streamlining build orders and stuff like that now, and that's not because they haven't been working at it. It's because it's not easy to do it.
Entire Navy wiped out by the Bermuda Triangle event. Someone who's pro-event losing 10,000 hammers in a single turn. I'm just waiting.
He's waiting for the tears of rage.
When I first met Brian, his attributes were creative and charismatic, but the deeper he falls into his addiction, he becomes aggressive and protective. He just won't let me in anymore.
So, what brings you all to me?
We have all been talking, and we think that you might have a problem. So, we'd like for you to agree to enroll in the Sivanon program, which is weekly meetings and a retreat in the woods for 6 weeks.
Not the woods that we've leveled to make more production shields, to create the Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
No, these are in New Jersey.
Okay, well, here's a question. Like, I mean, do you think that, you know, the best of, you know, these five, Babylon is actually better than, you know, the best of the other non-DLC civs?
It depends on the situation.
Ah.
I have to give that response.
Meaning they are better. If you're losing, they're not.
The top-tier civ, I hesitate to say that they're better than all the non-DLC civs. I don't know, but they're certainly top tier. It's kind of like when you're comparing Rome and Egypt and Persia and Civ 4 or something. Like, they're all really good. I don't know how you can easily pick one. It really is situational.
Okay. But the fact that, like, they are top tier rather than, you know, being the Native Americans in Civ 4, for example, well, you know, we'll wait for more DLC to come up, but if, for example, the quality of the average DLC civilization were greater than the average quality of the non-DLC civilizations, then I could see a major problem brewing. Why should we be generally worse in the game, on average worse at the game, because you don't have these nice, new, shiny DLC civs?
They're not broken. You're going to get some incidences of that, but like Majin just pointed out in the chat, Siamese is probably still the most broken civ, and they were one of the originals. Especially because you can get Watts right now as culture buildings from one of the social policies. It's kind of silly. But yeah, you're always going to have that, because Firaxis, throughout the years, has proven that they don't really have much balance sense. So I don't think that they would necessarily make DLC civilization stronger on purpose, but certainly they could still do it because they make things ridiculous all the time, like the Apostolic Ballast. So,
sure, but I find it inconceivable that they would make the DLC civilizations on average worse.
Well, I'm sure they could find ways like, oh, this sounds like a good unique ability, and then it actually turns out to be awful. I've certainly done that before. The unique unit for Holy Rome, for example, is just freaking terrible. Just to give one example, and it's not like it accompanied good traits. Like, so they basically made a civ that its only really strong benefit was its unique building. I don't know. It doesn't seem like they have any rhyme or reason to this. Like, I really don't think you can pin that intent on them for making civs too strong or too weak in DLC. I think it's just strictly they don't know how to balance, and sometimes you're going to get civs that are wildly too strong or weak as a result.
Okay.
Well, technically, they've run with the Inca in the poll, I'd like to point out. So, we're getting away from alphabetical order here now, because it's the Incas for some reason. You couldn't just put Inca.
V doesn't count in alphabetization, though.
But why did you put that?
You don't count articles. You don't count articles.
I know you don't, but why? If they didn't put, like, the Mongolia, why the Incas?
Well, there are some
nations
that put the in front, like the Ukraine.
That's not technically appropriate either. It's just Ukraine.
Well, you know, I mean, the Ukrainians say that. The Russians say something else. Who cares?
Yeah, I'm sure the Russian word in this case is really chalked out.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I mean, there are still stuff like the Virgin Islands, the Hague. Who knows why the Hague is called the Hague, okay? Well, I know why, but...
Is that an article, or is that its actual name, though?
It's called The Hague.
Yeah, it is.
And then at that point, you would be alphabetizing it by T.
Okay, yes.
It's not just Hague.
You wouldn't alphabetize the Virgin Islands that way. Or the Ivory Coast. Yeah, I guess silence means I win.
I just don't want to continue this discussion further. It's not appropriate to have you there.
Sorry.
Yay!
The time for trade.
Sorry, this is fascinating.
I mean, part of me was tempted to just keep saying things to incite her so she'd keep going on, but...
really. Feel it goes back to his normal activity. Trolling!
Crash the desktop, Mackie. Crash the desktop.
Stop it. Lightning bolts.
I can't believe I'm going to do this, but...
Yeah, don't encourage him.
That's funny, you usually say, no, not encouraging me.
We'll switch over to stereo mix here and play some audio for you guys.
Yeah, this
you
is
actually play other games while I'm playing Civ 4 multiplayer, usually.
Well, you're Phil.
I don't like that.
It's not just Phil.
Okay, I don't know.
I don't have the multitasking ability, apparently.
Well, I guess it is that stress in the middle of a game where you're just producing units for war or something, and it's blah, blah, blah. And
yeah, like, someone's at war and you're not, and you play your turn in, like, 5 to 10 seconds, but they're going to take a minute. Well, yeah, it's time to watch this part of a YouTube video. Yeah. I usually watch Let's Plays, but there was one time I played both Civ 5 and Civ 4 at the same time. That was a little hectic.
Whoa.
I
think I did. Did
Sid
4 know that you're cheating on it?
Yeah, it was a threesome with a player and two games. Excellent times.
Yeah, which means Sid 4 threw the RNG on him because it's like, cut little stick.
Centered.
Well, hey, you know his luck with the RNG now, if it all makes sense.
Wow. I never had good luck with the RNG. Why do you think I looked to another game in the first place? Wait, what are we talking about now?
I'm dying inside. Dying slow death. I wonder if they could make a Civilization strategy RPG in the mold of Heroes, Might, and Magic.
Well, you can get some pretty powerful units in Civ 5, I'll tell you that. You get something like an archer with a +1 range, the ability to attack twice, and can fire over cover. And it does feel a little bit like you have a god mode unit instead of a standard unit. It's like shooting further than cities can shoot. It does tremendous damage when next to a great general. It's pretty impressive. So they do have a little bit.
You know
bit
what? Now that I think of it, that's the next step for Civilization. Having a tactical battle mode in which, rather than having the units shoot at each other over terrain, you actually go down to the battlefield level and you actually maneuver units and try and beat them that way. So it isn't always each one takes pot shots at the other with a war of attrition, which actually have units that you have to fight.
Oh, I can't be so slow, though. It's so slow. Unless you can put me in everything.
I actually had something like that.
I think Call of Power had that, too, at least the original. Civilization Call of Power,
I think. Yeah, I know. I remember. I tried to forget that, Dan. I was not a fan of the Call of Power games at all.
It's not a challenge to defeat the AI in the field in any kind of way. It's more of a shore.
Above the road.
Get your units there, and you have to kill all of his units. And it's how should I put it? It's work, you know? It's not fun.
Yeah, you're trying to play a game. You don't want to have to...
Yeah, instead of micromanaging my army, running them back and forth and whittling them down.
Oh, slowly. Yeah, that's one of the downsides of one unit per tile. It's micromanaging the unit carpet.
Mm-hmm.
In my local circle, the biggest request is having proper Wonder movies. You know, we miss the style of Wonder movies that were in, even just in Civ 2 or Civ 3, you know, and then they started making these dinky little trailers when you used to have these extravagant videos showing what the Wonder was and what it did.
I don't remember so many Wonder videos in Civ 3. I just remember
maybe
VLC.
Civ 2.
Them.
Civ 2. Incredible.
Civ 2 had them. I never saw them, but Civ 4, I thought they were okay.
They're almost like animated GIFs, just of your thing being quickly built. Civ 2 went into these long movies talking about, you know, what they were doing and music and all that stuff.
Huh.
Yeah, at least for me, I would rather them focus on gameplay, because you'll see those Wonder videos, and yeah, like the first couple times you play, they might be interesting, but then it's like game 50 or game 100 when the replay value of the game is really in question. What you're going to want gameplay. I don't know.
It's not like the people who create the 3D Wonder movies are the same people that are going to program a fix to the, you know, double...
I hear that argument a lot, but there is a finite amount of resources available to a company and any time they design a game. And who they keep, who they hire, who they retain after the game comes out, all that is contingent upon where they place their priorities. And so, to some extent, yeah, they are choosing to put that in over gameplay.
Hey, don't fire all the graphic designers. Hire more programmers.
No,
I just know that I never skipped any of the Wonder movies in Alpha Centauri ever. I mean, I loved those movies in that game.
Even better, we can have Civilization VI region locked.
Oh yeah,
everyone's favorite.
You can only play Germany if you're in Germany. It's the new way of getting Civ players to wander around the world.
Yeah, you don't have to stay there, but you have to visit
there. Why are there so many people moving to Peru?
Yeah. It's a tourist game.
Hi. I've been suffering with Civ addiction. I don't even know how many years. I was first introduced probably when I was 10 or 12 by a friend of mine. And at the time, of course, I thought it was something perfectly innocent, you know, totally benign. And in my naivete, I took the disc from him and I popped it in my own computer and I opened up Civ. And I should have known from the get-go that it was going to be a huge battle for me, what I had just got myself into. And then when the pizza delivery guy came, I was engaged in a tactical nuclear strike on the Aztecs, and I couldn't be bothered in the middle of that to get up and answer the door. I mean, I know it's a turn-based game, for crying out loud. I mean, you take your eye off of the prize just for one moment, and, I mean, Elizabeth is going to stab you in the back.
Hey, look, the Roman Ballista got one vote, so.
I miss the Praetorian.
Wait a minute, how did the Indian War Elephant only get one?
I don't care
which Civ game it is. Every War Elephant that I've ever had to fight against have been supremely annoying.
The Siamese War Elephant is like that, but the Indian one is earlier in the game, and it's not as strong. It's certainly usable to rush, even on Deity. Someone proved it on the Strategy and Tips subforum, but it's certainly not the runaway awesome unique that you might think it is because it's called the War Elephant, which it's true. In most war games, they are unhistorically strong as all get out, and often to the ignorance of balance as well.
Civilization 4.
Yeah, exactly. Counter unit? What's counter unit?
Put the elephants on boats. They're on a boat.
That was one of the best troll posts ever.
It was. Man, what happened to that guy? He's totally gone now.
No, he isn't. He's posting on Civ 5 general discussion.
Oh, okay. I gotta get back to that.
The evidence is clear.
By the way, just to wrap this up, the most popular unit seems to have been the Chinese Chokonu.
It's a good unit. Certainly is. People have centered their rushes around them. Although in the current patch in Civ 5, you'll get rushed early in the game on high level, so you might not be able to get to it unless you build some defenses. I got killed that way once on Immortal, because the AI will literally like rush you inside 40 turns with its starting units, and you have to build defenses or you'll die.
Oh, it better be. The Chokonu better be good, because that's the only unit they get.
Yeah, well, their unique building isn't exactly bad. China's one of the better civs in the game. I mean, they can't quite match up to, like, Siamese or something, but they're still very good.
Yeah, some of these civs have got a unique unit and a unique building. Some have got a couple of unique units.
Siamese have a unique unit and building, too, but the problem with the Siamese is they get a bunch of watts from a social policy, which is just stupid. Because they don't need to build libraries. They can just get a bunch of essential, well, not freebie watts, but they get 4 watts for the cost of the social policy, and then start running scientists everywhere.
Yeah, interesting.
interestingly, they ran a test on the German forum. Snatty was talking about this. I don't read German. I don't speak German, unfortunately. But he said that they were testing getting pyramids with stone versus getting it in, versus ignoring them and trying to get the constitution. So it was who could get the constitution more rapidly. Pyramids with stone, building pyramids, or not building pyramids at all while still having the stone. Same start, identical start. They just played the start differently. And Snatty got there first without the pyramids. And this was a deity game. So even the pyramids, necessarily, they're not necessarily a no-brainer build.
I was going to go back to part of what you said, Bill. You said you don't speak German, unfortunately, but then you started talking about it. So does that mean that you gleaned it from seeing, the term Great Library of Pyramids, or did you run it through, an online translation service?
Google Chrome said, this page is in German. Would you like
to translate it? In this case, Natty was my translator. He was speaking about this in a thread in English and was basically rehashing the conversation. So I did not run this through Google Translate. I had a legitimate and competent speaker of the language summarize the results for me. And it wasn't really for me, but I read the thread anyway. So there you go.
And you weren't going to give him credit until I asked the question, huh? That's nice.
I said it was Snatty who did it. What do you want from me? Snatty's the awesome deity player in question here.
Well, you should give him the translation credit, too. Yeah. Anyway.
Whatever.
2K Greg did announce this week, I can't even believe I'm going to mention this, we've talked about this before, but combat animations are coming to multiplayer in Civ 5, so...
We didn't need those.
Why don't you use your time productively for
yeah, things? They are, however, all optional, so, there is that. And I, for one, have been a proponent of adding that in, because I have a problem in the few multiplayer games that I've played where my units get killed, and I didn't get to see that happen, so I have no idea what the condition of the killing unit was, so I have no idea whether it's worth sending something over there, to try to take him out. Like, if it's a barbarian and an encampment or something, I don't know, was it a spearman that killed me, or was it a warrior that killed me? I don't know, because I didn't get to see it, and the little notification goes away too soon. I think a better compromise would have been for them to improve the notification system in multiplayer, so that it gives you lasting notifications for these events that you don't get to see. And that would have been better than making us have to sit through animations and slow down the game.
That would have been much better. Not only are you sitting through animations, but you can get locked into those animations or forced to wait. It's just a bad idea. It escapes me what they were thinking in even considering adding animations themselves into multiplayer when you already had double moving as an issue for an entire year before they finally patched to that. And even then, it was kind of an iffy solution. The thing bothers me that they spent time on that as opposed to other things that would have been very productive for the game.
Side with the amount of time your turns are taking in multiplayer, Phil, you can also add combat animations in multiplayer. Aren't you glad that you can finally see your little guys fight?
Lisa went there.
Yeah, he responded quickly to that guy, and then the next guy asks for an optimization update, and there's just crickets. That's great. Yeah, you can make multiplayer games take even longer by using unit animations. Why is that such a requested feature? That makes me sad that even a decent chunk of the Civ community wanted that over other things.
One thing I was actually wondering about was the trying to win the same way as us has been removed from Gods and Kings as a diplomatic modifier. So if you look in the summary section, it's under minor things. It doesn't seem so minor to me. I mean, this was one thing that we were complaining about was not in Civ 4. Even though you were trying to win the game in a certain way, the AI would just do nothing about it and just do its own thing. It wouldn't just tell you diplomatically if you were trying to win a culture victory or build 15. As long as it wasn't pushing borders, they wouldn't really do anything about it.
Lisa is referring to the minor things to the summary thread for Gods and Kings from Civ Fanatics.
Yeah, I don't understand why they removed it and why they think it's a minor thing.
I think, in part, they removed it because the AI was extremely bad at predicting how you were trying to accomplish your victory. On turn 5, it would decide you're trying to accomplish victory the same way I am, and, as a player, you were thinking, I don't know what my victory type is yet. Why do you hate me?
I'll trigger that within the first 10-15 turns.
Yeah, that was the problem. It was triggering the diplomacy modifier too early. it was deciding so early in the game that you were trying to do the same thing. You roll over one city-state and maybe a civ, and you're trying to conquer like us.
Hopefully they've done something like adjusted the AI so that in the mid to late game, the AI can figure out that you're on the path to victory and how you might be trying to accomplish that, and then it adjusts its tactics without necessarily having a diplomacy modifier.
Yeah, it comes and smacks you down. That's what we needed it to do, not to be
It does that to other AI, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, like, for instance, if you accomplish the Apollo project, you're clearly going for a space victory. The AI should be gearing up to raise your cities at that point. If it's far enough behind on its victory type that it needs to slow you down, it should be gearing up to attack you just like a human player would.
Yeah, I can understand in that respect then getting a diplomatic modifier, in that case a negative one. But could you phrase it so that it doesn't actually refer to what I'm playing as the game? I'm trying to be immersed in the game, and I'm trying to forget that it actually is a game. And the fact that the AI is reminding me that it's a game isn't very nice.
I think that's just you, Dan. We all are aware that it's... I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm okay with being reminded it's just a game. Then you can, like, feel a little bit less stressed about it. This is not my life.
I guess you could change the modifier or whatever to say you're competing with them in the space race or...
going into, like, the XML file?
Military power.
That's fine. Yes, that's fine. Just don't mention that you're trying to win the game the same way. It's just, hey, yeah, like, you're going for the space race. Or you're trying to gain favor of city-states towards diplomatic victory. Oh, no, I'm just going to contradict myself. You're trying to gain favor of city-states, period. So, anyway.
Are they going to give us a quest where if you conquer enough barbarian camps, you have a greater radius for spawn busting? That would be great. Because even when we've not put on raging barbarians on this, we've had raging barbarians, basically.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe these are the friendly version.
Not from the plays of through-throughs I've seen so far.
Right, yeah. Especially if they have horses.
But they just want to give you a hug.
And a sick hug.
I was going to say, I think they used up all their hugs on taming those horses.
Well, my idea of a perfect date is to take my trireme out for a moonlit cruise along the coast. Have a nice romantic dinner with a seafood buffet where we'd feast on my plus one food from my trading post. And if things go well, I'll have you screaming just one more turn all night long. It's not what's on the outside that matters. It's what's on the inside that counts for me. I'm looking for a woman who's willing to open her borders to me. I'd like to enter into a defensive pact and maybe if things go well, settle down in a permanent alliance. I wouldn't mind popping out a few settlers of my own one day.
If you've got a catapult lying around that's not been attached to anything, and then along comes an infantryman, he can pick it up and work out how to use it, and basic laws of artillery means he's going to be a much better shot from basic trigonometry in his training on how to fire artillery.
I'm not sure about that. Basic trigonometry has been around for 500 years.
Well, he's going to be a much better shot than someone who just picks it up and goes, oh, catapult, throw. Ooh, that hurts him.
I like throwing my big stones about.
Yeah, only having certain units being compatible with siege elements is sensible. It means probably that they are attached. If the two were in a pair, you would have to upgrade them together.
But it may be a bit complex.
Yeah, just detach them, then upgrade.
But wouldn't players then just de-pair them, always before upgrading?
Yeah, but maybe it costs maybe 200 to do the pair, whereas it would cost like 230 to like do them separately.
Well, so to upgrade one would be cheaper than to upgrade both together, but to detach them would be even more expensive on top of that.
Well, I guess the thing I think is in obsolete units in general is, think in the 1700s, nobody used catapults then. Like, no one. Why are we allowed to do this in Civ?
What if we simply made the mechanic thus that units that aren't obsolete can use any non-obsolete artillery, and obsolete units can use any obsolete artillery? That means if you have an ancient warrior guy lying around, you can use that ancient catapult, but a modern infantry can't pick up that ancient catapult.
I don't see any reason someone wouldn't be able to use a catapult.
I think we'd work the other way, but the thing is that I think when your technology reaches a certain point, certain upgrades should be for free. Like, say you discovered rifles, your obsolete unit might get upgraded to muskets or something like that, not rifles immediately.
When you can build riflemen, upgrading your axemen to masonmen is going to be pretty cheap.
Or for much cheaper than it is currently.
Perhaps also on a major change, at least as far as if you've been a Civilization IV player, religion. which...
What religion?
Yeah, it seems like it's been suggested that it's been removed from the game in favor of reworking the diplomacy with other methods. And I've read some people saying good because it was all about what religion was better, da, 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 da. And I didn't view it that way at all. What are you talking about? It, religions had names, but...
otherwise identical.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what?
Yeah, the only thing that made one religion better than another was which civs in your game that you're playing at that time had what religion.
Well, one controversial part of that was actually really generated was the whole some religions must come before others, and that probably could have been offensive to people, although if you knew enough about the game, you could have random religions.
Well, and then Beyond the Sword, right, introduced pick your own religion.
Yeah, I'm just guessing that they got some very terrible hate mail.
The main purpose of religion was to break the groups into different factions. Plenty of other ways to do that, so that different groups don't like each other for various reasons.
I think Civ 4 did blow the strength of religion out of proportion when it comes to empire alignment, because really, most leaders in history would probably favor doing things that's in their interest rather than just based on religion, and they would probably weigh doing things in their interest more strongly. Yeah, I mean, there's some exceptions, but I would say the majority of the leaders that we see in Civ 4 historically cared about the position of their empire more than the religious alignment of their empire against the others.
That presupposes that the two are mutually exclusive.
Well, yeah, they're not mutually exclusive, but my point is, in Civ 4, it kind of makes it so that they are. Like, it's such an overriding factor for the majority of AIs that you can literally influence the outcome of the game by flipping somebody's religion using espionage. And if they make that a little more balanced so that you don't get total screw yous in one game and have it really easy in the other, that would be a very good thing for the gameplay, in my opinion.
I understand.
In Civ 4, if the AI doesn't like you, you can't convince it to do things that are in its favor. You cannot convince it to go to war with its worst enemy if it doesn't like you.
Can't convince it that if you capitulate, you'll still survive. But no, we're doing just fine on our own. Those mechanics are completely broken.
Aggressive would be useful in a very specific situation, and even if I don't know my layout, what kind of game I'm going to get, what the board's going to look like, maybe I just feel like I want to do a rush, I just want to kick some AI butt, then the traits take on a different priority. Do you guys ever start games with an intent for a particular type of play?
Every now and then I do.
Sometimes.
Mostly I just play and see what happens, but now and then there's one specific strategy I want to try or one specific thing I want to see happen or whatever. Of course, I'm always trying to do something different in each game so that I can learn some new strategy. I never would have appreciated the power of religion if I hadn't decided to try a game and just go absolutely all out for it and grab all seven religions if I could.
Yeah, I do that sometimes. Sorry, you get them all in one city. That's just different challenges, you know. It's nice that you get bored of the normal game, even though different board setups can give you a different reality that you adjust to and have fun with that. Nice to take these little odd victory conditions, like trying to take out all the opponents before they get Axemen or something, or founding all religions in one city. I sometimes like the one-city challenge, or I'll limit myself to three, and with the founding all the religions in one city, you just have to go with one city for a little while. And on a monarch level or such, you're taking some chances, you know, so it's kind of fun.
They're the fleas of the sea. There you go.
Or at least barbed galleys don't usually blockade you, unless you're playing better AI mod.
Hmm.
Those privateers will do it, though. Not effectively, but sometimes.
Occasionally, I mean, if you find a galleon on the high seas unprotected, having a privateer just sinking it, whoever it is, you know, just to grief it.
Hmm. Yeah, prevent them from settling those off-seas islands. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's practically cost-free for yourself if you have it sailing around there, just popping a few galleons while people haven't started convoying their ships.
And you're helping improve other people's gameplay.
Yeah.
Schooling them for still having galleys.
Or galleons. Anything that's unprotected.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's straight griefing, though. Anytime you harm the position of competing players, you've improved your own, so...
Yeah, yeah. But also, cutting up resources, privateers can be good for that.
Yes.
So trade routes, sea trade routes. Of course, better ships exist for that, but if you don't want to openly declare war, I really like the concept, and I think they should have more of that in Civ 5. I mean, right here, and even land-based units like guerrillas or something. I think that would be awesome, so that you can fight clandestine wars and stuff.
Yeah, I think we talked about it this earlier podcast about hidden nationality units, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes,
we did.
Episode 75.
Oh, ancient history, huh?
Oh, man, it's a long time ago now. It bothers me that units like cannons can't outrange cities, but longbows can do so. Both from a balance standpoint and realism standpoint, it bothers me.
From a realism standpoint, I think it's true. But from balance, I don't think so.
It depends on which kind of cannon you're talking about. Because early cannons, the arrows could outrange. But once you started talking about rifle barrels and the cannons, there's no way anybody could shoot something further than that cannon using an arrow, like a bow of any kind.
So well, I don't know. I think these cannons in the games are like those cannons used in the American Civil War, for example. That kind of...
Well, I know of one major battle where the rifle barrel cannon made all the difference. Essentially, I think it was a Confederate fort. It was completely screwed over because the Union brought a cannon with rifle barrels and could completely outrange it. Just couldn't do anything back. And they had to surrender because they were starting to hit into their munitions. That was problematic. So yeah, that really was right around the time where cannons started to get that kind of range. But yeah, Civ cannons and Civ 5, probably more representative of the earlier kinds, if you're talking about realism.
Yeah, speaking of which, I would really like to see an artillery piece that has a 3 range before the artillery, actually.
Yes, that would be...
Were we talking about, like, unique units?
That's true, we were.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Stand new advanced balance discussion here. Go on for, like, hours.
Yeah, just one more turn, right? No harm there. Go for it. You remember, Civil Wars and Civ 1? Whatever happened to those? Those were cool.
I know, right?
Wait. Actually, why not consider a diplomatic approach? You know, a, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer sort of deal? Unless an iron pops up outside your borders and inside theirs, it tends to change things.
Yeah, it does.
Ah, conquering the world with awesome graphics. Now that's the life.
Yeah, it is. Perhaps I should get some sleep.
No. New Civ coming out. Gotta stay on top of your game. Ready yourself for hexagons, single unit tiles, and of course, more turns.
More turns.
And remember, keep civin.
I'm just talking to myself right now, aren't I?
Yep.
Just one more turn. Just one more turn. Just one more turn. Just one more turn.
I really don't like that cities can shoot as far as Siege until late game. That bothers me. The whole point of Siege, historically, has been to outrange cities. And now that you included a tactical layer, the fact that that can't happen is pretty jarring. And the fact that Siege requires a resource, and it takes up a spot, and it gets in the way of other stuff, it's really annoying to have that. I think the Civ 5 map in general probably should have been zoomed out a little bit, so to speak. Maybe have more total hexes, but then higher city distance minimums or something like that. Because the way it is now, we just have way too much unit cluttering for one unit per tile. And that is the issue, and I think that's part of the reason, or a large part of the reason, that people are frustrated with one unit per tile as a model isn't the fact that it's one unit per tile, but because of the limitations it's introduced in the game that really haven't been addressed. I don't know, maybe that will be looked at in the future, but that's at least my biggest gripe with one unit per tile. And as I said, I like it better as a design concept, but in practice, I don't yet. That doesn't mean I couldn't be swayed a little better.
You know what? The one thing that disappointed me was that, I don't know how many people remember this, but Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri, it was supposed to be part of a trilogy in which you would link up the game so that you'd go from Civ 2 into Alpha Centauri and then into a third game, you know, and it would be one long continuous game.
Oh, that sounds majestic.
It never happened, but that was...
It sounds majestic.
Yeah. You always want to continue from a Civ game into, like, an Alpha Centauri-type game.
Well, you're going to Alpha Centauri in the first... Well, at least that's one of the victory conditions, but, you know.
And then there was the attempt to combine the Civ and the Alpha Centauri through the Cult of Power series, which... Anyway.
The Masters of Orion, there you go.
Oh, we're already going to have a moment of silence. We don't need, like...
I will say I did enjoy the Civ 2 Test of Time, the Master of Magic mod, which was really cool. I don't know. Somehow that's related.
Yeah, okay.
It was followed by the it was an official
unique
mod.
Units, well, right?
Definitely a unique unit, yes.
There was a response in this thread from Shadow Badass, and no, I'm not just quoting him because I like to say that name. He talks about how he would rather see a great leader instead of a great general, where through promotions would be able to increase the number of units that could stack. So when you first get a great leader, you could stack two units, and then it gets promoted, and it's a major, and you can stack a third unit, then a fourth unit for a colonel, and finally he gets to the rank of general and can stack five units. So now it's called a division or a regiment.
And then how is the AI going to handle that now that it's programmed for one unit per tile?
Yes, you know, we're starting to, I'm just thinking, whoa, wait a minute.
Derp. There's a reason we took out stack.
I'm reminded of the armies in Civ 3 as well.
Oh, God.
This would be unbelievably powerful. Could you imagine it being able to attack a point with five units on a hex? Oh, my God. That would be obscene. You could take cities, like, turn two consistently if you were at tech parity. It would just be ludicrous how easy it would be. And no, I don't think the AI would treat these units very intelligently at all.
The AI would definitely have a derp moment.
Shadow Badass argues that he doesn't like Stack of Doom, but this would keep a limit on the Stack of Doom and still allow for combined arms. Combined arms is still, quote-unquote, allowed, and actually in a lot of circumstances, just going in with one type of unit to attack can be quite perilous. You know, let's just go in with melee, let's forget ranged or siege. Well, sometimes that can work for you, maybe really early on. Get a lucky roll, someone's right beside you, poof, you take them by surprise, or perhaps you're in a multiplayer game with another human, and they're not thinking, or something, but no, I don't think this is a good idea. No offense, Shadow Badass, but I think that's even worse than the great general modification suggestion.
It would be fun, but it would be broken, yes. Doesn't lead to long-term fun.
If we were back in even thinking about Civ 4, or before where we had Stacks of Doom, I mean, you talked about armies in Civ 3. I actually think about armies in Civilization Revolution, where you could have three units, they get onto the same tile, and then they combine, and now they're an army, and right away their attack is 50% greater, which, yeah, we could get into the percentages and stuff, because Civ Rev is more about some extremes as opposed to some of the more quote-unquote balance that we get in the PC version of the game. But then that's taking us back out of the one unit per tile situation. And I think we've discussed before how overall we prefer one unit per tile rather than unlimited number of units per tile.
Now, before you rank them, I've always found that the Ship of the Line always seems to be more effective than it has any right to be for some reason. I don't know what it is, but they always seem to just come in and just blow away any ships. Even if the other ship are more advanced than them, they just come in, knock them off, and go away.
Unless they're destroyers. But why do you feel like so few people voted for that? I mean, I feel like naval special units kind of get the short end of the stick in general. And, well, I mean, I can see the point because some people are just kind of ignore the naval side of the game, especially with embarkation now. But it can be pretty effective, especially if you can kind of snipe some embarked units.
It depends on the map, really. And that's part of the problem with naval units, I guess. But on any map where they're even a little bit relevant, people underuse Navy in general. Because what happens is you only have so many tiles, hexes, you can affect on land. But with the Navy, you essentially can threaten from more directions, and you have a unit that can bombard and cause quite a bit of damage on top of that.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
So, yeah, it's actually a solid unit. And for naval superiority, naval superiority in this game screws the opponent. And that was actually true in Civ 4 also, but people didn't really understand that.
I found that, though. You know, that's one of the things I liked about the fact that you only have one unit per hex in Civ 5 was that it made space is really, really precious, much more than when you had the killer stacks of Doom. So now people are actually forced into utilizing naval units because they can't fit any of the land units on their land or other people's land anymore.
Let me put it this way. If you played against somebody good in a multiplayer game and you neglected your navy, you could die instantly. It was really bad. It mattered. It mattered a lot. Unless you liked getting all your coastal cities raised. But that's not usually fun. They usually lose when you get a decent chunk of your cities raised. But it applies in Civ 5, too. Just the ability to threaten so many different things at once using your navy and wear down stuff on land using your navy combined is pretty impressive. And it works well as a follow-up after England's unique unit.
One thing that I think would benefit is if each individual deposit was smaller, but there are more deposits, because then it increases your chances of having at least some of a resource. Mm-hmm. But you can't just, like, found one city, six iron, and you can just go to town with swordsmen from just one deposit. It's a little bit extreme.
Yeah, and I've actually had that game where I got the iron early and then dominated until late game when I had no high-tech resources. And couldn't keep the pressure up when we got to higher units.
It's okay to have random luck in the game, because otherwise, you know, we wouldn't have any unexpected events to deal with.
Yeah.
But I do think there should be somewhat, in this area, somewhat more of a focus on player skill and strategy, and less on random luck of where resources spawn.
Yeah, and again, really hurts in the late game when you are waiting hours to see if you've got aluminum or not.
Yeah. One thing that could help with that is by moving the reveal of aluminum slightly earlier in the tech tree. So you still can't use it until you know you have units that need it, but you could at least plan ahead of it. Because after all, the AI can see every resource from turn one. So it just give the player a little bit more strategic ability. So like, I don't have any aluminum. I'm going to need it in 50 turns, so I'm going to go try and conquer or settle the city here to get some.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, imagine it's pre-ordered Civ 6 confirmed.
No, you totally. You have to get Hunt 2 if you want
to. Oh, throwdown. You have to be an idiot not to pre-order Civ 6. Wow.
And if you're going to buy Civ 6 after it launches, but before 90 days is over, then yes, it's really, really dumb because you purposely hurt yourself. I mean, if you're waiting more than 90 days, then who cares?
I just preferred the absolute statement. Even if you don't game, if you don't pre-order Civ 6, you're an idiot. No, I'm going with that. That's a good headline. Totally. Yeah.
It's certainly fair enough to say that if you're listening to this podcast about Civilization, you should have Civilization 6 pre-ordered. And by the way, Civilization 5 is on sale on Steam right now, although I'm sure every single person listening to this podcast probably already owns it. But if you don't, buy it for a friend.
All right, so Derek, you know what the question to you is now, right?
How many copies are you going to buy for us?
I don't have any hookup for Civilization 6, though if you're interested in Stardock games, I could probably hook you up.
Yes, please.
But
one of each, thank you.
Derek, you don't need any hookups in the industry to buy games for us. I just... I'm not letting you off that easy, sir. And copies, the minimum is 2. You're going to buy at least 2 copies for each of us, because otherwise it would be copy. Starts at 2. Let's go. What's the number?
Grammar correct.
We can pay it forward. See?
Are you taking notes here?
I don't know.
And that includes all the people watching right now. So.
Oh. Starting to go up a little bit in price now.
Most of us are probably that are on the panel are also looking at the chat. So we are also part of the audience. So really, if you're extending the audience, that means you're buying us as a host 2 copies at least, and then you're buying us as an audience member at least 2 copies. So we've at least got 4 copies coming our way. Yes. Excellent.
All the poor viewers. They're like, what's going on?
This podcast has gone off the rails, courtesy of...
Come on. Everyone knows that everyone in the gaming industry is a millionaire. Derek's got lots of money. It's no problem. It's all good.
For sure.
No.
All you do is make games.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Doesn't he own Stardock now? Isn't he like the president of Stardock or something?
Nope. You make infinite money when you're making games. That's why game studios never go out of business. Have you noticed that?
That's true. That's a valid statement.
I have noticed that as well. They never do. Not even after.
What Derek meant to say is that he's not the head of Stardock yet. We just have to wait one more day for the coup to finish. Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry, we're early.
Hey, dude.
Hey, what part of do not enter do you not understand? And what's up with the camera?
Dude, I was planning to shoot this Sivanon video that we spoke about your gaming addiction. Do you have 2 minutes to shoot it right now?
Well, do we have to do this right now, like in the middle of the turn here? I'm about to crash Napoleon with my fraternity mommy. Check this out.
Dude, you're always in the middle of a turn.
Just give me one more turn. I also need to deal with the copper embargo that Gambi imposed on me.
One more turn. Dude, did you say that last time when the Mongols were attacking your border?
Oh yeah, that was scary, right? I hate Kestrel, they're unstoppable. Why do you think this clan has to be so aggressive? I don't understand that.
Stop, no more turns, dude.
Look who wants peace. How about your head would look good on the end of a pole?
Have you even been listening to me?
Alright, sorry, man. Sorry. I'm done. No more turns, I promise. Hey. Are you there? You wanna play multiplayer?
Screw you.
I really think that there should be 2 leaders for every civilization, because if I'm not in the mood to come into a game with Monty, there's no way for me to have random leaders but have him kicked out. Like, I have an issue with Victoria, and I can make sure she's not in the game but still have the rest of them be random, because I can pick Liz.
Okay.
Or whoever the other white guy is, the English leader that the color is white.
Churchill,
yeah. I can pick one of them, and then I know Victoria won't be in the game because there won't be 2 English leaders. But then I can leave all the rest of them random, so I guess I'm surprised. But I can't do that with Monty. Hmm. And I can't do that with anybody else who there's only 1 leader. And there are some games when I don't want to see Monty's little skull hat. So I wish there were 2 leaders for every civ that was.
So short of modding, which would be a modcast discussion, you could choose to play Monty. I guess that would be your only choice.
Yeah.
Or not play the game at all, which would not be acceptable.
But, you know, Jaguars have really tacky outfits. I can't be Monty because Jaguars have really tacky outfits.
Okay, that's an argument I haven't heard before.
No, I'm sorry, have you seen them? They just look hideous. Shaka's impies, they're up. Jaguars, thumbs down. I'm not going to go to war with them, most likely, so, you know, there's other criteria that I have to consider.
What you would really want then, and what I think would be quite a popular option, would be the ability to exclude specific leaders. That might be nice to have as well in the game setup.
Yeah, and I don't think some people would ever use it, but...
I think a lot of people would put Tokugawa on there.
Well, I like him.
Well, but definitely.
He's really easy to control because he won't trade with anybody. So if you get in nice with him at first, you can trade freely with him. Now, chances are he won't have anything to trade back with you, but he won't trade anything that you trade to him to anybody else. So you can kiss up to him, and then he'll go, you know, do a little attack dog thing. And sometimes he's actually very helpful in fights.
Hmm.
And you don't have to worry about him attacking you because he's on your good side. I'm a builder, not in, I want to build pretty shiny wonders sense, but in the I don't want people to attack me.
Okay.
I think the main problem is just the way the militaristic city-states are done, because unless if the city-state has actually built a barracks or something, the units are never going to have an experience, so they're not particularly useful in that regard. And it can also give you trash units like scouts and such, or carriers. So there are some issues there, and also you can't really know when to expect them. It's very randomized, it's very hidden from the player, it's not very visible.
Mm-hmm.
I think one approach that would help with that is if, like, all the city-states you had contributed towards a pool, and once that pool was filled, like with great people, it would give you a militaristic unit, so that you could look at the city-state and see how far am I on progress towards my next unit. and if the units actually started with some experience so that they would work alongside contemporary units.
I thought actually through the interface that if you open a city state and you hover over the icon that talks about whether your friends are allies, it will tell you, oh, it will grant you a military unit every 10 turns, 12 turns, 17 turns. I mean, yes, you would have to know, okay, so what turn number am I at since...
Exactly.
The last one I had, which is, it's like, okay, but how about even telling me you will receive another unit from them in 7 turns? Rather than trying to keep track of, you know...
Exactly. It's not very transparent. And the other issue with it, if they drop out of friendly or allied status, and then you put money in to bring it back up, the timer will reset. If it was like a pool that was all built up, then it would carry over from one time to the next, and it wouldn't just be wasted.
That's been a consistent issue in Civ. I kind of forget with Civ 3, but it feels like every Civ I play, you get muskets and up rifles, and rifles are a lot better than muskets, so you just wind up on rifles.
And I wonder if you got muskets, you would move on to riflemen pretty quickly, and then musketmen are moved, basically, quite quickly. So you have to switch over all your cities to muskets to get the number of muskets that you would need, and so unless you're like really technologically advanced, it's usually worth it just to wait for rifles.
Historically speaking, what's the difference between even rifles and infantry? Fully automatic assault rifles, it's only a couple hundred years. Strictly speaking, gunpowder was available for much longer before the Renaissance in history than actually going from rifles to infantry. So it's kind of backwards in its implementation in Civ. But where do you put the muskets in Civ, I guess? Because you've had some kind of musket weapons in, like, the very early thousands of AD, or maybe even before that. You had these, like, very crude-looking things that had one shot or whatever, and then they took forever to reload, but they were there.
Little fire lancers.
And then Lauren's entire post. I've been too pessimistic about trade posts in Brave New World. These days, I normally actually go for domination victories, domestic gold output of cities, economic screen is more important together with city connections. Foreign trade routes are welcome, but of secondary importance to the overall domination lit. Therefore, trade posts are welcome addition in non-riverline terrain. Substantial amount of gold doing so, this is because you can actually build the free maintenance cost line buildings in all your cities. And then science line buildings get built into universities in all my cities, best cities from public school and research lab. Happiness line buildings get built into Coliseum, Circus in all my cities. From that point on, I prefer cheaper happiness lines, such as Autocracy, Walls building line, and Barracks building line. These get built in all cities eventually. Not strictly necessary, though, admittedly, because in late game you can still raise cities at manageable pace without tanking overall happiness. World ideology also eliminates ideology pressure happiness penalties. All cities should work a free trade route post at least, so you can get more benefit out of gold line buildings with their modifiers. Oh, I'm sorry, is that a question?
Yeah, that's a question.
Oh, okay.
It's not written like a question.
No, it's not. It's like, I got to the end, it's like, oh, wait, there's a question mark.
Yeah, this is in a how many trading posts do you build in your cities thread. We've talked about trading posts before, but I don't think all cities should work a few trading posts. If your city's a production city, you really don't want it working a trading post, unless it ran out of places to build.
When Mega Bears fans, I had to laugh at this. If you have control of the role of Congress at any point, you may want to consider proposing the nuclear non-proliferation resolution. Well, okay, I think we can say pretty well any civilization we're going to talk about, you get nuclear missiles into play. That's going to hurt a lot of any civilization's unique anything. But quite frankly, I've noticed, I think since the last patch, or maybe the patch before, the AI really, 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 and I mean really, hates that resolution with a freaking passion. So unless you have the ability to defend yourself against that, I guess you got to weigh the cost of, are they likely to use nuclear missiles against me? In which case, okay, fine, but if you're just going to end up pissing them off for that purpose, I wouldn't do it.
Nah, kill them before they get to the nuke tech. It's easier that way. The only time you should ever go for nuclear non-proliferation is when you see an AI has all the uranium and has already gotten ahead in tech and you need to take some more time before you can win and you have no uranium yourself. Otherwise, just go take theirs or just go over and pillage it before they get to the nuke techs.
I could see a hybrid of that, which could be, they've got all the uranium. I'm going to go take it with some other units, but in the meantime, no nuclear non-proliferation. And then when you get all the uranium, it's like, okay, well, enough of this. Especially if you control the... it's like, okay, let's remove that now, now that I have the uranium.
Of course, if you're at that point, you're probably going to accidentally win a Diplo victory anyways. If you control it that much at that point in time.
Yeah, that and how many XCOM units are you going to be able to land?
Lots.
Lots, yeah. By that, I mean the terrain. Can you surround the city if it's really high city strength? Then what do I need nukes for?
The nuke is probably less hammers.
But the nuke is also only one time, whereas the XCOM is not.
But you only need
you only need like six nukes total. So rather than building like enough XCOM to surround each of the six capitals or however many there are, you can build one nuke plus the XCOMs to take it.
I would prefer those cities that I'm about to capture be perhaps useful at some point. Although, admittedly,
the game ends the following turn.
If I know if it's that late, I admit if it's that late. But at the same time, you know, I'd still like to know that the cities could end up being useful, and it'll keep. I'll have a higher score because there won't be as much pop loss.
Just tell yourself it will be useful eventually. It's all good.
I take these things into account.
Happiness.
This won't be in this game.
Well, this game that matters, I tell you what.
Well, long-run considerations are not that valuable when you're winning the game next turn.
It's okay, Dan. You can take your irradiated population and put them on a spaceship and then use them as your first pioneers.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about not having uranium. I have XCOM. Ah!
Well, yeah, if you don't have uranium, then okay. You can just build a couple units to take something with uranium, and then you have uranium. Then you nuke people.
Obvious. No, just use the units. Forget about the uranium at that point. Just use the XCOM.
Well, okay, yeah, I do end a lot of games by just going artillery and taking uranium.
Life is like a hurricane.
XP Max. XP Max.
Race cars and an aeroplane. Lights of a mystery. Or rewriting. So he still has this 5 1/4 inch floppy disk.
Wow.
Remember those things?
The only such floppy I still have is the original Civilization floppy disks in the original box. That's all those other floppies are gone. I have no drive that can read it, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I've got a number of old games sitting in the box with their disks. Don't have anything that can read the disks, but I still have the disks.
Yep.
And quite a few computers I've gone through since I even had the 3 1/2 inch disks.
Yeah.
All the cast the musical. It's still on the table.
So what if
we're recording a podcast,
every line,
musical.
What if I sing every line?
That's right.
Hello and welcome to the episode 141.
It was a very good reason we have the no singing rule. So
we recorded on the
25th. No, seriously, stop. If you keep singing, I'm gonna leave.
You know, it's like we got Netherlands and Celtics, Mayans and Byzantines. You know, that's right. Sure.
Where's the leaf button? Just kidding.
Farms in the 20th century are nowhere near the farms that were in like 1 BC. So that's also true.
That, and of course, as time goes on, you're going to, I mean, you're not going to probably be able to like construct a mine as soon as the game starts, but you could probably have a builder. So it's like, okay, this generation of builder, when they were made, they didn't know about that, but. Hey, we've researched this technology, and now we can mine. Yay. And then successive generations of builders can also do that.
Yeah.
Although that would be
actually bad.
Yeah, I'm not saying specifically that, you constructed this builder before you could mine, now you have to construct a new builder because...
That would suck.
Then I have to learn new tricks. That might be an air quotes fun mod or scenario, but let's not have that in the base game. No, I'm not suggesting that. As soon as I said it, I thought, oh no, what am I saying?
First Civilization 6 expansion, worker unions.
Yeah.
See, children, there used to be a time where games came on physical media.
What's a game box?
Yeah, right.
Well, you can just still get that with Civilization 6, but you kind of have to go air quotes out of your way, as it were.
And a manual? A printed manual?
There used to be a thing called instruction manual. It was a crappy solution that we had to deal with before tutorials were made.
Basic rule for the controls and not much else. And then they realized they could just put that in the game and save themselves the print.
Yep. Especially because most manuals were written before the game was finished being done. So.
Yeah.
We had to delete time on printing it. Oops, we changed the control scheme. Sorry.
Or we just deleted that.
Civilization 6, Day Zero DLC, Instruction Manual. LOL.
Oh, God.
There was actually a pun in the thread, and I didn't even come up with it.
I was going to ask if Dan picked the thread just because of this pun.
Yeah, I saw the pun.
Not just because, but it was a plus 25% diplomatic modifier. This is an act. Brandon had made a comment on our Skype conversation. The last time he was on the show, Lisa was still a regular co-host, and here's Lisa back replacing an absent Mad Jin, so it's serendipitous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just prompted just having both Brandon and Lisa on the show to do some data searching. I was interested to see, in terms of guests, because strictly speaking, as a guest co-host, what is the longest time between appearances on the show? And Brandon, you'll be happy to know that you are fifth all-time running right now.
Boo!
Also, just wants to coming back on the show.
Because you see, the last time that you were on the show, it was episode 145. And so here you are, 108 episodes later. Lisa, you now have the title of the greatest time between guest appearances. Yes, the last time you were on Polycast was episode 151, which was only 102 episodes ago. But the last time you were a guest was 83, which was 170 episodes ago, which makes you ahead by one episode of Dojo Boy and Lode Parkin. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. It was only 100 episodes ago that I was like a regular co-host, so, I mean, it's not that long ago, I feel like.
It's a technicality, though.
Yeah, it is a technicality.
Yes, Dan and his stats and his technicalities, like, you know how this goes.
Let him have it.
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guests who have gone more than 100 episodes between appearances.
We've already forgotten about them. Focus on me, people. Focus on me.
You do realize that one of those six is you. But you mean forget everyone other than you on that list?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
I'm focused on me.
He's here for the me.
And Lisa, because Lisa is awesome, and she was super nice to me last time I was here.
Aw, thanks.
But this time, no.
No, Dan.
Call it today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 441-212-887659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
How did you find the show?
Off of Sith Fanatics when you guys post it on the front page.
If there was one thing that you would like to see changed on the show, what would that be?
Let's see. You guys, you know, talk a lot about Civ 5, but that's, you know, duh, because that's the current game. But I would love to hear a little bit more commentary about all the games in general, because, you know, it is a Civilization strategy podcast. I'm always looking out for, you know, the section where you guys talk about Civ 4 or Civ 3 once in a blue moon. There's still a pretty big community for Civ 3, so I think that those people would enjoy hearing that kind of stuff as well.
Of course, the correct answer is that you wanted us to record more shows, but that's easy.
No, Dan. Well, I certainly enjoyed Civ 3 more than I did Civ 5, so, you know.
And I think one of the things to keep in mind with that is that, you know, strategies and stuff for Civ 3 and Civ 4 have been beaten to death. They're all over the place, so, you know, you can find that anywhere. But yeah, I mean, it would still be nice to go back and talk about the old games every now and then, too.
And our last question for you here is, what is your favorite part about the show?
My favorite part about the show, I always love the forum talk, because you guys go into the forums, find what people are talking about, and then you expound upon it and discuss it very in-depth and very wisely and sagely.
My housemates were asking me about the podcast. They're like, is this an explicit podcast? I was like, well, we're not going to talk about Catherine the Great, if that's what you mean.
That really needs to be said, dude.
Come on.
And then the people asking you the question were probably like, oh, forget that show then. That's so good.
Some people might be interested in that. Weird people out there.
What's this podcast about? Is it about World of Warcraft or one of those?
Stargate Atlantis Clips, copyright MGM.
Tell the Hun you're done.
Speaking of done.
All right, get out.
We'll save the intro-outro topic for...
I don't think your outro is acknowledged there, imagine, or your conclusion.
Yeah, I don't think he likes it.
No, because that was invalid, and you know it was invalid.
It works for everything else.
Out. Just because it works for everything else doesn't mean it works for this show, too.
That's not true, imagine. Sometimes you have to accompany with it a little extra physical force.
Mm.
7 on contest clips in order of appearance. Aaron Grossman, James Mabbitt, Luke Diamond, Kevin Tucker. Bye, all.
Bye.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Just the way you said it.
Yeah. What a start to the day.
Joe Mahanan, Joseph Cray, and Matthew Becker. Civilization 4, 5, 6, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive.
I am excited to try Greased out. I think that is definitely one of the ones that I will start with.
Ooh, one of the ones you will start with. So what Derek's doing is he's going to buy multiple copies of Civ 6. Mm-hmm. So we can start multiple games at the same time. And one of them will be Greased.
Many instances at the same time and lag everyone to heck that he's playing with.
I multiply with myself so I never lose. It works out great.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, I'm
get Rex,
that.
Fool, you suck at aim.
Oh, wait, that was me.
Civilization 4, 5, 6, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive.
By the way, the polycast dynamic is really great when you have the grumpy Madjin and the optimistic Dan, and the snarky me and team, and the sighing constantly.
Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.